The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MNW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. I'm your host, Striga, as always joined by my man, Dylan, but not, as always, from my home, because I'm right now in my beautiful hotel room here in Hamburg, Germany, because I'm visiting a friend over the weekend. I went one day early, so I avoided the chaos over the weekend, the train chaos that is imminent over the weekend here from the west of Germany to northern Germany. And I went early, and believe it or not, Dylan, German transportation doesn't really have the best reputation, at least public transportation. But all my trains today were on time. And that fact made me miss one match of the Ottawa show. And that's Great O'Khan and Tangaloa.
As I said, I thought that was the match we all agreed upon, that we needed to know your opinion most. It was the match we all looked forward to most. It was really the real main event of this whole tournament. And unfortunately, that's just the one you happened to miss.
I want to say, though, we said it on our last show, Tangaloa, he had better matches than his first one. So I'm really looking to catch up on this match to just see what it turned out like, and especially to just see what the hell is going on with the Great O'Khan and him losing all his matches.
He did a lot of legwork in the match, and It was pretty boring, but then Loa fired up at the end. He had a cool enziguri at the end.
Nice.
Loa did. But yeah, O'Khan, he stinks.
Well. Yeah, before we go to the G1 Climax, Dylan, three quick notes actually at the beginning of the show. We said it on our last show, Saya Kamitani injured her elbow in the main event of the first five-star Grand Prix show last weekend. And it was now announced that what everybody probably already expected, that she's out of the tournament. What does that mean for the block? Was she going... I thought that you were like looking for... Oh, she was one of the favorites going into her block, wasn't she? So what does it mean for her block?
Yeah, she was one of the favorites. Me and Sandre did a prediction show on the Patreon for the whole tournament, actually. Predicted every single match, much like I did solo one for a G1, and we got a Noah one coming out in a few days as well with me and Dean and Dr. Jonathan. But the point is, he picked Saya to win her block, actually, and make the final. Mm. And it was logical considering the story that they had told. I didn't pick Saya to win, but she was a favorite. She would have been my number two pick. But the story they had told, the big story, was her siding with Utami and saving her in the cage match. And That was a blow-off after a long storyline where they teased a breakup. But it didn't come to pass. They reunited. It looked like that could be something. I didn't think that was going to happen, but she was a favorite. If she had done it, it would have surprised nobody, and she was probably what most people thought. You know, it depends on what they had in mind. Her winning the tournament was far from an impossibility as well. Like, she was one of the favorites to win the whole tournament, let alone the block. So I would say that if that happened, obviously there's going to be some major changes. And, I mean, there's going to be major changes no matter what. She was going to be a big player in this block one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm just looking at the lineups for the tournament, and she would have gone one-on-one with Zuzu Suzuki at the final day of the Red Stars, final day of block action. So you can probably assume that that would have been a crucial match besides the Tam Nakano and Natsupoi match.
Yeah, that was going to be one of the major ones. You could go either way. Mayu is up there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, like, Red Stars has a lot of people that could be players. Like, Mayu and Starlight is going to be a major match as well, just because of their history. They always face on the last night of block play in the tournament historically. So that's three big matches in Red Stars.
I mean, it's bad for Saya that she's out now, but it's really good for Stardom that she's out at this point of the tournament, because they can make rearrangements and they don't have any points that got thrown away because Saya Kametani won matches or the other one has a tiebreaker over the other one that they can't go back with. So at least it's very early in the tournament and they can make adjustments, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. That is the one positive you could put on it. It's better now, right away, than later. But obviously a devastating injury for her. And we'll see what happens in the coming future. But yeah, dislocated elbow, that's going to be tough. You're probably looking at 3 to 4 months, for her, I would say. And they might want to keep her out a little. We talked about this on the Patreon show. They might want to keep her out a little bit longer anyway.
Yeah, it was already announced that she's going to miss the Dream Tag Festival on September 10th.
Yeah.
Who's going to be replaced by Tam Nakano in that one. So she's going to be out for the foreseeable next set of weeks.
Oh, yeah, it'll be longer than weeks. Like I said, if she missed the rest of the year, it wouldn't surprise me. Just with her body type. I mean, a dislocated elbow, that's something you'll have to work through. But more importantly, if there was a vital thing for her to come back in a little while, she probably could make it a little bit earlier than 3 to 4 months. But ideally, like, the problem is when she comes back, it'll be right around tag league time. And they're going to be in the middle of another tournament, probably, like by the time she could come back realistically. Yeah. So they're not going to push her to come back in a meaningless middle of the tournament. They'll probably wait. And then you got the year-end show. So, you know, like I said, if she missed the end of the rest of the year, it wouldn't be that surprising. But hopefully she can come back healthy, you know, and better than ever, because she was somebody that they had really pushed. And I mean, look at last year. I mean, her title reign with the white belt lasted forever on there. So, like, she's somebody they have big plans for. She's going to be a future top star for them if all things go well. So just play it safe. That would be my advice. Just play it safe with her and bring her back when she can make more of an impact. And, you know, just let this elbow heal up. Terrible timing, obviously, because, like I said, she was going to be a major player in this tournament, if not win it. You know, that was very, very possible. So I feel bad because of the timing, but hopefully she can get well soon.
Get well soon, Saya Kametani. Then there's an article on Tokyo Sports. Dylan, the headline reads, "Who is Megan Bain, the mysterious giant who decided to challenge for the world title by attacking Tam Nakano?" I quote here, "Megan's nationality, date of birth, etc. are known, and the details are wrapped in a veil. According to Stardom executive producer Rossi Ogawa, she has been a professional wrestler for 6 years and has been nicknamed the Megasus because she wears a Pegasus-like costume. And she's said to be 180 centimeters tall because she can do an F5 that knocked out Nakano. She seems like a player like Brock Lesnar, who is active in the WWE. I think Tam Nakano will have a threat as a challenger." Yeah, that match was set up. It's announced for the Stardom show in Osaka on August 13. Megan Bain challenging Tam Nakano. The same show has Utami Hayashishita challenging Mayu Iwatani for the IWGP Women's title. Mayu's first defense, actually. Goddesses of Stardom title Mina Shirakawa and Mariah May defend against Natsupoi and Saori Ano. High speed title Saki Kashima defends against Koguma. She's out, by the way, too, right?
Who?
Saki.
Saki Kashima?
Yeah.
Oh, she's not in the tournament, but I don't know if she's injured.
I think I read something about her, but it doesn't really matter. One Red Stars match, Starlight Kid and Natsuko Tora, and then there's a gauntlet match on the card as well. So that's the card for the Edian Arena number one, the big Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium, actually.
Yeah, we talked about this again on the Patreon, me and Sandre did. I don't really like that they're running these shows in the middle of the tournament, because they announced this one and there's another one in a couple of weeks that's like a Legends show, which is like the first time they've done something like that. But it's interesting, I guess, that they went to that well, and now they're doing this here. Obviously, it feels like a status to try and increase their pay-per-view buys. Or try to run another pay-per-view to get pay-per-view buys, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the title match it's a filler match at the end of the day, and hopefully Megan can impress some people. I know she had like a match in like AEW Dark or something when that was still a thing. but not much of note. She's kind of an unknown player. It'd be great look. You could just see her right away. Like you said, very big, powerful. You know, hopefully I wish the best for her. I don't know anything about her, but hopefully that she can impress and show a lot. The Mayu match, that's going to be interesting. The title itself is so weak, you know, yeah. and kind of meaningless, you know, at the end of the day. I kind of said this on the show, the Patreon here. I'll drop this hot take here. I predicted Mayu to win the tournament, actually. Like, she was my pick. And one of the counterpoints Sandre brought up was the championship. Like, that they wouldn't want the championship to win. I would not be surprised if this title doesn't go away.
Has she been wearing the title anyways?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at her Twitter...
She bring it to the ring?
Her head, yeah. Header. Her header. Yeah, her header is of her, like, proudly displaying the title. Mm-hmm. But to me, this title is worthless. She has not defended it at all. And this whole time that she's won it in April, the New Japan does not care about this title, or actually they actively dislike it.
Yeah, so, like after she won the title, there was no title match announced for any of the New Japan shows.
Nope.
So yeah, that's
not even Dominion.
No, not even Dominion. And that was really the thing that was announced at the beginning of the belt, that it would be defended at bigger New Japan shows.
And we saw what they thought of that on the Wrestle Kingdom with the 5-minute match. I mean, that kind of sealed its fate. And it's a shame because the title decision match or whatever last year when they had the historic crossover mm-hmm. was wildly successful, a huge draw, great match, blah, blah, blah. I like a great moment. And then it's like they immediately showed you what they really thought of it with the 5-minute match. And then, like you said, they did the thing with Mercedes, like going in there. And that's really what the title was. They kind of used it as. It's just a toy for Mercedes to have while she was there. And because she got injured, it's now basically, you know, worthless at the moment. But they got their spot on Sakura Genesis with a triple threat match. And that's as far as it went. And like I said, it wouldn't surprise me if this title doesn't go away very soon. I could easily see them unifying that with the red belt if they do go the direction that I said. And if not, it may just go away. Like, nobody even talks about it eventually, you know, at the time comes. Because what is New Japan going to have a use for this title, ultimately? Yeah. And it's a shame, but it's what I thought from the moment they announced it. That it would face rocky circumstances and people trying to sabotage it and people not liking it. And I mean, I know all about that. It's wrestling after all, but but still, you know, at the end of the day, like, I mean, I've felt experiences like that myself, you know, where stuff like that could happen. And then you see something like this where, of course, they wouldn't like it. So it's a shame, but hopefully the match can be very good at least. It doesn't make a lot of sense for Utami to challenge for it, but you know, either. But you know, it is what it is. I mean, I guess she was in America lately, so I don't know what they're really doing with that. But it's interesting if they put that together.
Yes. Then another injury that I wanted to talk about quickly because
One more thing before you get to that, I want to say one more thing about Stardom. They announced mm-hmm. that the Julia match would happen. Julia versus you would be on the show. I think the G1 final they did there. The strong title?
The strong title match?
Yeah, the women's title match. It's going to be Julia versus you.
Yeah. They talked about it on commentary.
Yeah.
I think yesterday they did, yes.
And that'll be a really great match. Keep your eyes peeled out for that. That's something that would be really cool when it happens.
Absolutely, yes. So, one more injury I was going to talk about because it somehow impacts WXW in Germany as well, because some people worried about it. Fuminori Abe, who is right now in the Fire Festival that 01 is running, is out, and 01 announced that he is out due to a neck injury. That was on July 25. Fuminori Abe, in the meantime, has stated that he was diagnosed with a cervical muscle contusion and will be out of action for approximately 3 weeks. So he apparently was lucky that he didn't get injured any more severe. So he will be back in action probably at some point in August, and then will also be able to make it to WXW Tag League with Takuya Nomura. The Astronauts were announced for that tournament. So that at least is good news, while he being out of the Fyre Festival is, of course, bad news.
Yeah, get well soon to Fuminori Abe, a wonderful wrestler. But it's good that he'll be good to go for Germany, for all the European fans out there, for WXW.
Another bit of news from 01, actually the second bit of news from 01, Dylan. Wow, what a time. Is that the longtime ring announcer that probably everybody associates with 01 Pro Wrestling is leaving the company. It's not really clear if he's retiring. He is 49 years old. That's not really an age that you retire with, especially not in Japan. He's known as Oki Okita and debuted for All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling in 1994 and has been the ring announcer since 01's beginning in 2001. And now this guy, his real name is Yoshia Okita. He is leaving 01 and said he realized the importance of passing the torch to future generations. This is why he decided to, quote-unquote, graduate. Graduate in Japanese terms can mean various things. Usually it means that you leave one company and go to another company. If he is going to be a wrestling announcer again, that I don't know. He definitely has some other things going in life. He has been part of different TV series as well, has had appearances in TV. So who knows what is up with this guy. But definitely one of the faces of 01, one of the steady guys that you always saw at the shows, that is gone now too from 01. And yeah, that company doesn't have a lot to offer anymore.
Well, they've been hanging around for over two decades now.
They are running this Fyre Festival, right? And I recently did some results for Cage Match as well. And of course, I know that they went to the Sportiva Arena knowing that this is a very intimate building and that is that there are not many fans that can get into the place, but just seeing a Fyre Festival show draw 52 people, it was just something that represents the state of the company, because in other cases they don't do well either in other places, like when they do Osaka or something like that. It's just what it is. It's a company, much like you said, they are hanging around.
It's a shame because they used to be a much bigger deal than they are now. I mean, they used to be not up there with, like, New Japan, like, you know, they're going to take over the country or anything, but they were up there as a legitimate major league company.
They were, they were the place where some real stars later on in Japanese pro wrestling or in pro wrestling in general made their first impact. I'm thinking about, like, of course, Steve Corino is synonymous with 01, Samoa Joe made his first steps in Japanese wrestling in 01. Loki, for example, as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lots of
AJ
guys.
Was there.
AJ Styles was there, too, in the early days of 01. So lots of guys that were players in Japanese wrestling made their first steps in 01 at first.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that was many regimes ago.
Yes.
You know, when all of that happened. But, I mean, we've seen different eras. I mean, I've contacted
through a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, we've all lived through them, even me, very intimately, back when Nakamura was the owner, when, like Mr. Nakamura, Yoshiyuki, he ran the company well, but then there were all kinds of stuff going on, people leaving, power plays, and now they have, like, you know, and the thing is this, Oki Okita, the ring announcer, he was not just the ring announcer, but he was a major player in 01. Like, if you go back and look at their press conferences, like, when they got the new sponsor, the new company, which was, like, I think, like, Daito Holding or something like that in Japan, right? Mm-hmm. This was, like, 2-3 years ago when this happened. He was the main guy at the press conference, along with Otani, obviously. He was another representative. And when they did this thing with Glate, when Tamura left, and there was all that controversy over the contract and all of that, he was the one that was doing the announcement for that.
Yeah.
So he was a major player in the company, not just the ring announcer, you know, overall. And it's a shame to see how small they've gotten, but there's nowhere really they could go at this point. You know, like, they don't really have any momentum or new stars coming in. I've always appreciated them as a company, to be honest, like just their product when it airs, which is increasingly more rare as time has come across, unfortunately. But I've always appreciated their wrestling. I think they have a good grounded style. You know, they were the first company that made Hideki Suzuki their world champion.
Right. And it's really a shame because these January 1 shows are usually highly appreciated by anyone that watches them.
Yeah, those used to be some of my favorite shows. One of my favorite shows was the 2011 version, which was main evented by Akuto Hidaka and Daisuke Sakamoto. One of my favorite matches when I was first getting into Japanese wrestling. And I felt like, man, this company's hot. It's cool. Great matches. You know, again, another one. Sakamoto got a big start there. Yuji Hino was the champion there for a while. So they've given a lot of starts. Obviously, Daichi. When he left, that really felt like the beginning of the downfall. Like, I mean, it was already going down before that, obviously, but that's when it really felt like, oh, even he left, and he was going to be their major prospect, you know, their hope, and they don't have anybody like that. That's a star prospect. They have a lot of good wrestlers. Some guys have came over from Wrestle One when they closed down. They've got good guys on the roster, but it's just there's no stars there. And
nobody's going anywhere in that company.
Yeah, exactly. Like, with no stars, where can you go?
Right. The final of the Fyre Festival, at least, will be on Samurai TV. The final is happening on July 29 in Kurikan Hall, and it will air on Samurai on August 12.
Yeah, there's another thing I liked about them, too, is that they've always... I mean, right now in this tournament, you have Unagi Sayaka in there. Mm-hmm. You've had Asuka before the Fire Festival. Even going back, you had Yuhi, who was like one of their trainees, and she was a great wrestler, unfortunately retired with all kinds of stuff there. But, you know, they've given a great... They do death matches sometimes. They've used Joshi wrestlers on their shows. They've grown into a company that does a little bit of everything. So I will watch that show for sure, the Fire
Me
Festival
too.
Title. So I hope it
Me
goes
too.
Well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's the one tournament that... we briefly touched on. We are going to talk about another more extensively here. That's, of course, the G1 Climax. Before we go into anything, much like in our last episodes, Dylan, I'm asking you right now, how are you feeling now after this stretch of 3 shows in Tokyo, 2 in Kurikan, and 1 in Ota City General?
Oh, I think the tournament's definitely taken a step forward the last 3 shows, I would say. It's still not, like, completely where I'm super, super engaged. There's still some stuff that I have gripes about, which I will get into on the show as well. But I think the quality of the shows from night 7 to 9, once they got to Korakuen, really stepped up, I would say. The crowd seemed really hot. They felt like big shows. They did some major angles. They had an upset here or there as well. So I think the tournament's doing good. But not great would be. And before, I mean, obviously, the last time we came on here, they had a horrible show.
So yes, we had one real good show. That was probably at that point the show of the tournament. And now I would really say that the first day in Kurikan Hall show was the best show overall of the tournament because up and down, I enjoyed this show the most.
I think that was a show. You can see that if you look at that show, I don't know which one I liked better overall as a show, but I do think that if you look at Night 7, the thing that stood out was a lot of these guys...
Actually, it's the second.
Yeah, I thought the second one was the best one too. But I will say about Night 7, though, a lot of these guys had their best matches of the tournament
right.
in that show. Like, Okan, best match of the tournament.
Sure.
Gabe Kidd, best match of the tournament, although that would change at Night 9.
Right.
Chase had his best match of the tournament versus Tsuji. Hikuleo had his only even above average match of the tournament versus Rin Narita. You know, Sanada, I thought, had his best match of the tournament. So it's like you've got all of these guys having best matches of the tournament on Night 7. I think that energy really stepped up and flowed
Absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely. That was a nice turnaround in comparison to what we used to see on the early undercards for the most part, that there was just really nothing going on these undercards. And now we had Will Ospreay in the opener. Leading the Great Okan to a good match.
Yep.
And of course, we had this incredible finish to Sanada versus Kaito Kiyomiya, a match that was absolutely heated. Kurikan Hall was... I was actually looking out for the fans' reactions, and Kaito Kiyomiya was just beloved by Kirk and Hall, and there were so many of these green lights in the hands of the fans. The guy was completely over with the crowd, and that would continue, of course. You mentioned the match that Gabe Kidd had. It was with Kaito Kiyomiya also on the Ottawa show. Kaito Kiyomiya was hugely over, and that also was due to the part that Gabe Kidd played in that match, because he was one ruthless, aggressive heel. That helped Kaito Kiyomiya shine in that situation.
Yeah, all of that stuff is true. What do you want to go in depth about first here? Because you said a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. Let's first tackle the poll that I made yesterday, the impromptu poll about the two nights in Kirkenhall. I made a poll, choose your best match, and the match that won was Ishii versus Kingston with 50% of the votes, then Zanada versus Kiyomiya, 34.5%, Okada versus Yoshihashi, 12.9%, and poor Cobb and Zack Sabre Jr. got 2.2% of the votes. I just went with the best rated cage matches from both nights in Kurikan, put them up there, and Cobb and Zack Sabre, not a favorite, but Dylan. The Ishii versus Kingston match, that won the most popular match of that two shows. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do agree, actually of those. It was close. I thought with Okada and Yoshihashi would be right up there with me. I thought that was a really fantastic match overall. It's very similar to the Okada and Taichi match they did, where Okada was clearly the dominating favorite, and then the crowd rallied behind the underdog. It felt like an old school type of show, because that used to be the reputation of Corkin. They would always be super hot for the underdog flares. And, I mean, we saw that with Kaito in the main event as well. Kingston and Ishii, great match, I thought. This was the match where I thought Kingston finally put his stuff together here, and almost in a real life way, where you can see the exhaustion of this tournament is just wearing on this man, and he's having to fight and give everything he's got, even if he doesn't have, if he's running on E, he still has to go. And Ishii's just like this boulder of a man, you know, where he can withstand anything. He's been in the G1 a decade, and all of the hard hitting matches he's done. Just a really great match that Ishii really did a great job. And that flying headbutt spot he did was so good. I thought you had the back and forth there. And, you know, you had Kingston trying to do his King's Road, like, fan wrestling. And Ishii brought, I'm Ishii wrestling. like I said, so Ishii was awesome here. To me, Ishii has clearly been the best worker of this tournament overall. Once again, as he always is, to be honest.
I saw the rating yesterday when at this time when I looked at it, the rating was above 9 on Cage Match. Now we are quote unquote down to 8.89, and I would
I was still really good.
I would definitely settle if there was an 8.5. I would really settle at 8.5. I was really into the first part of the match, where you said that the wear and tear of the tournament was visible especially for Kingston. He was really selling his lower back, having pain, and really wasn't able to do all of his usual moves and strikes and sorts of that. But suddenly that changed, and I would have really loved to see more of that style in the match, because that would have been a completely different match from what we are used to from these two guys. But then, of course, they went into their direction what suits the most, what they are known for, what they want to do, what they can do. And that was go out swinging. And Kevin Kelly even managed it on commentary, a word that I used on the last show, emulate. That Kingston isn't emulating. And I think this is the first match in which I saw what he's trying for, that he's really trying to do tribute spots like the Kobashi chops in the corner. I get that. But still, though, first part of the match I really was into. Second part, I was just sitting down saying, yeah, that's good. I enjoy this.
Yeah, and that's what I mentioned when he even got announced. My fear was there's going to be a lot of that emulating, which I don't think suits his style. Like, the Kobashi chops doesn't suit him at all, in my opinion. I wish that he would drop a lot of that stuff and just be the stuff that he's good at, more or less. But, like I said, I also give him a little bit of a pass, even if I'm not going to personally be a fan of it, because he is working his dream right now, you know, so obviously he's getting to do all of this stuff that probably means a lot to him personally, which is more important than if it makes for the best match in our view. But I you didn't say anything wrong. I agree with everything you said, actually.
Second best rated match on the show is Jeff Cobb versus Zack Sabre Jr. The main event, 16 minutes, 16 seconds, 8.26. Then we have Shane Hayes getting the big upset over Tetsuya Naito, 7.3. And also the semi-main, I want to shout out, was Tama Tonga and David Finlay in a match that was clearly built on grudge. And you could see that with Tama Tonga attacking David Finlay at the entrance and being completely aggressive and ruthless with him too. David Finlay really didn't know what was happening to him. Went into the match and slowly but steadily regained control of Tama Tonga, and Tama Tonga then got the win, the quick pinfall with the Hurricane Rana in the end to get some revenge on the Bullet Club. I thought that this was one of the best matches of Tama Tonga that I can remember in recent time. Finlay looked very good here as well. And what I liked about this specifically was that this was an all-action match. No real bullshit, no interference from the outside. Just straightforward, two guys that hate each other throwing fists.
Yeah, Finlay hasn't done any of that stuff, really, in the tournament. Unlike his the War Dogs, you could say, out there. I graded all three of the last three matches the same rating. Like, 3.5 stars was where I had all three, which I thought were good, not great. I think Tama's... Like I said, I've said this before, I like Tama as a babyface, actually. Yeah. I think he's a pretty good guy. I mentioned it on the one... Yeah, I mentioned on the last show, the terrible show we talked about, his match with Mikey, when he was able to fire up the crowd and take his top off, that was one of the only times they actually reacted to anything on there. And I thought the match he had with Ishii was a great main event night four. Like, a really good, not a great, but a good main event on the same level as this match with Finlay as well. I think they're about the same for me. But another good match. Finlay, I've always been a fan of. I think he totally... I love the gimmick. I think it's a great heel gimmick, one that's not cartoony or stupid like all of the other ones that they have. He actually has one that's a good heel gimmick that actually gets legit heat, makes you feel things, and the work is very good as well. He's a good worker, especially in his style, and Tama mixed well with him. So, yeah, that was a really good match overall for its style.
Yep. I really enjoyed the Shane Hayes versus Tetsuya Naito match, not only because it was a upset victory for Hayes. I think that you could really sense that he may be getting the victory with the style that Tetsuya Naito was working in that match, because he tried to hold him down with the cravat hold, of course, working for his finish, for the Destino. But Shane Hayes would always find a way to like weasel out of the cravat hold that held him down on the mat, and then of course he got the big upset there over Tetsuya Naito. What do you think? Where is this all leading for Naito?
I still think he's probably going to win the tournament overall. This was points control, like pretty much, so he doesn't get too far ahead. They're going to make the Naito and Tanahashi match as dramatic as possible on the last night.
But
I mean, the match was clearly Hayes' best match. I mean, he's a guy who's really been under-delivering for me up to this point. The whole D block actually has been the worst block, in my opinion, like pretty easily. If you look up and down. Yeah, like, I'm putting all my grades together, because we're more or less over the midway point at this point, and there's only one guy that averages over a 3-star rating on my scale at D-Block, and that's Cobb. And, like, you could argue, for all the talk about him, Tanahashi could be the second best person of this block, and he's not even doing great. Like, you know, it's like, none of these matches are
having
good.
A 3-star run of matches right now, so, yeah.
Exactly, which is better than most of D-Block. I mean, yeah. part of that is also Goto's injury. I mean, that's really hurt him, ultimately. Haste has really been not that great. You have Yano in there. Coughlin, we haven't been a big fan of. You know, Zach's had to wrestle goofy guys like Coughlin and Yano. So, Naito, I haven't been impressed with either. So, I think D-Block in general has been really low on the totem pole. But this match was one of the better ones, I would say, of the whole block. And definitely for both men, I thought pretty easily their best matches. Not just Haste, but I think Naito as well. Overall, so I thought that it was a good match, a good upset. You got a lot of energy from that, And it's good to see, because he was a guy I really circled. I wanted to see him show me something, and instead his partner was the one that has really impressed me much more than he has. But he did get a big win here, and Naito, I still think he's going to win, ultimately.
Yeah. One more talking point on this show. We're kind of going back and forth between the shows here. That's of course, it's of course day 8 of Kurokana. But I'm just, since you just talked about Shane Hayes and you also mentioned Block C, I want to say that Mikey Nichols once again proved that he really belongs in this tournament, because he's one of the best surprises in this entire field, because he's really working hard. Once again, with Shingo Takagi, we saw that. I thought the match that they had on the undercard was great. We only have it as 6.92, but man, I really thought that Nichols put everything into this. Once again, was bleeding from the forehead, and he, much like I said, he really wants to prove that his early run that he had with New Japan, where he completely bombed, wasn't him at all, and that this is more what he has to bring to the table. So the match ended then with a weird finish too. I said it was like a mix of a fast press and a pumping bomber. They basically they ran into each other.
I love that match. Yeah. I thought Mikey, to me, has been my favorite person to watch of the whole tournament. I'm not going to say he was the best, like, rating wise, but I just have so much fun watching his matches right now. Yeah, he's the MVP in terms of effort, I would say, of the tournament. And it's led to, like you said, busted open again on these headbutts. I don't know what's gotten into him, but I love his wrestling. I really hope that he hears me and all the people that praise him or for his effort, because I know there's some critics out there that are going to be on him, but I hope that he knows I appreciate his effort that he's doing personally. I would tell him that to his face if he's right here, because he is so improved from where he was at, and a guy that nobody really had any expectations for, I would say, and he's used that to his advantage to have another tremendous match. I mean, the match with Hinare to me was one of my favorites of the whole tournament as well. I had that as a 4-star match with Mikey and Shingo, right up there with Ishii and Kingston. And I think Mikey's matches have so much heart to them that I can't help but love it. And even the finish, I know a lot of people said that was messed up, but I actually thought it wasn't clean, but it was impactful. It wasn't like a weak finish either.
Like, we don't only need like clean finishes, we need different finishes. We need some roll-up finishes, we need some finishes that looked messed up but work in the end. We need all of that, actually.
And it wasn't even, it was messy, but it was impactful. It still looked like it could be a painful
finish. It fits the match very well, to be quite honest, because these were two guys just grinding.
Exactly. I mean, and it makes sense. You see the headbutts and everything like that. Both guys looking like they're out of it. You know, maybe Shingo wasn't all there, so he goes with this weird version of the pumping bomber. But it still looked good. Like, in terms of it hurt. Like, that's what I mean. Even if it wasn't like the clean cut pumping bomber, it was a good, painful, like, solid finish. So Mikey, to me, has really, really impressed me, and big props to him. He would definitely be in my top 10 of the tournament, of this 32 man field that they've given us. He's a top tier performer overall. Yes. I have my rankings here. I have the numbers written out, but he's up there. So I really appreciate that. And Shingo as well, right up there, right near the top as well. You know, he's right near the top of the field in terms of best worker, as we all knew he would be overall. And I think that match, I just love the heart of Mikey's matches.
So then let's go back to day 7, July 25, Kurokan Hall. By the way, they announced a crowd of 1,471 and 1,472 for these two shows, both labeled as Supernova Vacancy Full House. One more on the second day fit in.
Clearly a lie. On night one, they just had an extra person that they fit in on night two.
Yes. What did the One Night Dream show do, actually? That was then, right?
Yeah, that was 1,500, I think.
1,500. Yeah, 1,515.
To be precise. Oh, yeah, 1,515.
Yes. So that, much like I said, that outdid the G1 Climax shows in Kurokan Hall. We had Okada and Yoshihashi. You mentioned that match. I was very much into this match as well. And the story that was told in commentary by Chris Charlton was very interesting as well. To back that up a little bit, like, that Yoshihashi is actually the senior of Katsushika Okada when it comes to the New Japan Dojo. But of course, Okada passed him by flying colors early on when they came back from excursion. And now Okada, of course, is the big champion, the big ace of the company, while Yoshihashi is the beloved underdog. And that was the story of the match. Okada clearly told him, here, I am the guy. He tried to do a one-foot pinfall. The ref wouldn't count it. So he was clearly living out his dominance above Yoshihashi. But Yoshihashi came back with some cool action with his lariat. You mentioned this lariat where he then raises the arm in the end. That's one of his big spots now. And he also got a very near fall that had me pop up on my sofa, actually. I believed for a split second that Yoshihashi would actually pull the upset on Okada. Unfortunately, that did not happen, and Okada got the win in the end, remained unbeaten, 8 points for him. That was good.
Oh, excellent match. Okada did a great job. Again, very similar to the Taichi match on the other show that they did, where he was even more of a dickhead because this is a more personal deal, ultimately. So I thought it was that much better that because these guys have a lot of history together. With Yoshihashi coming in there and to see him fire up at the end. I mean, Yoshihashi got a lot in the match. I definitely hung in there with Okada the whole time. I really liked what they did. Like you said, Okada's a great heel. And he's another one of these guys. You know, he started off a little bit slow with those first two matches, but then he rises up with Taichi and Yoshihashi. I mean, he's coming in there as an MVP candidate as well. Like, I think he's done some great work the last two times. So another fantastic match. And Yoshihashi, he's another one. Again, if you look at his wrestling, the thing is, he's not a threat to win the tournament or anything like that, but if you just look at his in-ring, he's right up there, like another of the best guys, I would say, in the block in the tournament as well. So great run for both men.
Yes, Yoshihashi has now proven himself that he definitely belongs. He's not anymore on the chopping block of the tournament where people will say like, oh, Yoshihashi, I don't know about him. I don't know if he belongs in the tournament. This guy has been working hard over the last couple of years to earn his spot in this. Yeah, you mentioned he is not winning the tournament at any point. He's in the midfield of this G1 Climax. And with this field expanding so much, that obviously is not a question that he is in. But even if the field was just like 20 people, Yoshihashi would not be on the chopping block anymore.
No, he's proven himself many, many times, I would say, at this point. But hopefully people can now put all of that to bed. But finally, I'm sure they won't. I'm sure next year that we'll see that again. But another great performance of the tournament for him. And, hopefully he can get a big win one day. I mean, the thing is, you know, he's in his 40s now.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
that's crazy. It's
not like he's...
He's older than Kota Ibushi, too, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, so it's not like he's this up-and-coming guy where they really need to make him or anything like that. But just for a gold watch win, like they should give him a big win over Okada at some point to have his story come full circle. I thought they might do it here. I was like you. I was kind of buying in to this match. So hopefully
that tells you how great these two are, that they actually made you believe. And this also was my favorite match of the show, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
What do you think about the main event?
I definitely thought that was Sonata's best match of the tournament.
Agreed.
But I do have
by far.
I do have some gripes, though, and the one major one got pointed out on Cage Match. Okay, so I'm going to call the user on here. He claims that they blew the finish, that the pinfall came at 20:01 and not 1958. So did New Japan rig this match, which would never happen in wrestling, as we know. But did they work this time to where they got it 2 seconds ahead, but really it was after the 20 minutes? This should be a draw under this claim on Cage Match.
That is definitely very interesting because the final minute seemed to be a very long minute, right?
Uh-huh. See, did it go a few seconds too fast here? This is something we need to investigate. So I still like the match. I wish Sonata had sold a lot of the stuff they did early on a lot more.
Seeing this comment right now, the corruption of New Japan officials is unbounded.
A legend. Who said that?
Right 15 is the name. It's the same comment, actually.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you, Right 15, for speaking the truth right now. You're the only one I can really trust in this wrestling business. So I rated this. I wish Sonata had sold the leg a bit more overall.
Yeah.
Because, like, the big point of this match was he was trying to go for the Muto figure four a lot. And, I mean, he locked it in. But then it's like, okay, now it's time to get to our stuff. And it made the finish, like, so the first part of the match was okay. Like, it wasn't, like, terrible or anything like that. It was okay. Then it got great, like, at the second half of the match. And then the last 2 minutes were really great, I would say, overall. So I ended up with this being a legit great match. But I said this in my ratings. I gave this a 4-star originally. But I will knock this to 3¾ if that is true. If Wright's claim is true that they did not stick the landing. Because that this match is invalid. Like, Kaito should be ahead, and Sonata cannot be undefeated anymore. But still, a better match than all of Sonata's other matches. And Kaito is, we mentioned it again, he has been a complete standout of the tournament. Been one of the guys that got over with the fans. Corkin rallied behind him. All of the shows are actually, they are rallying behind him as a good babyface, even though he's an outsider. And he's just done great work with everybody. He's gotten the best out of pretty much everyone he's wrestled. And I think he's had made a fantastic impression.
Yeah, absolutely agreed with that. What you said about the match, actually, is kind of a blueprint for a lot of these main event matches in the G1 Climax. Okay, first 10 minutes, and then they get great. And that's what we've seen, for example, with Okada and Will Ospreay on today's show in Ottawa as well. I thought that there, the first 10 minutes, good stuff. They had a story to tell. They did that well. But then they really turned it on in the final... What is this? Is 18 minutes? 17 minutes?
17:21
In the final, 8 to 9 minutes, they really turned it on. Yes. Before we go to Ottawa, some more points on this show. Actually, you mentioned Hikuleo got a decent match out of Renarita. El Fantasmo beat Tangaloa. Noteworthy is that...
Yeah, the other way around. Narita got a decent match out of Hikuleo.
El Fantasmo beat Tangaloa to get his first 2 points. Noteworthy is that they did a handshake before the match. Both obviously former members of the Bullet Club, but Tangaloa was thrown out before Fantasmo was thrown out. And actually, Tangaloa is now with Honta, and El Fantasmo doesn't have a group. And that's part of the deal that they are going with, also with Fantasmo and Kenta on the Ottawa show. He picked up his next 2 points, rolling up Kenta in the shortest G1 match. Actually, Kenta, like, beat him up mercilessly on the outside, bloodied him, but then they only rang the bell because they only then made it to the inside, and Fantasmo rolled him up quickly in 19 seconds. They are telling the story that Fantasmo doesn't have an affiliation right now and is on his own. And I do think that this is, if he sticks around, this can be a long-term deal for him, because you can see the groundswell of fans getting behind Fantasmo right now. There is more and more fans in the audience wearing merchandise, wearing the glasses that they sell for him. And I think when next year's tournament comes around, he will be in a group that may be Hontai, that may be something else. And then he will not start out with an 0-3 record. I think he will start out much, much better, because then they will tell the story that he has now newfound confidence in himself because he has a group of people that he belongs to.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely getting over with the fans. He's a guy, when he was a heel, and I mentioned this on the Patreon, he was a guy when he was a heel. He did every cheap heel trick you could have.
Yes.
Like that was in his arsenal that he could do. And it really made him not super enjoyable for me. Then last year, he was kind of in this mid stage where he wasn't kicked out of Bullet Club, but he was kind of leaning more babyface, where he had that great match with the Eagles and the Best Super Juniors. I got to make out with Peter when Yujiro was in the tournament last year at D-Block.
You will always point to that. I love it.
Well, the thing is, that's why this story doesn't really work logically, like, ultimately, because he was already alive on the final day last year, at the end of the day, you know, like, and now we're kind of going back to this 0-3. If they had not done that, it would have been a lot better for him to lose confidence, but whatever, like, you know, people don't think about it that deep, probably, so it's fine, you know, but the point is, he was having good matches last year. He had a good run in the tournament, doing good things. Now that he's fully turned babyface, kicked out of Bullet Club, he's doing every cheap babyface thing that he can do to actually get the crowd on his side. And he's like this really over-the-top babyface guy. And I don't hate that. I think the effort is clearly there with everything he did. Even as a heel, I think the effort was there. But I do think that there is a little bit of that. It's not as genuine in my opinion, as some, like we were talking about with these, like Nichols, that's a completely heartfelt performance that he's pulling in there. Phantasmo feels like he's trying to be the most babyfaced who ever babyfaced in New Japan, and I hope to see a little bit more. Maybe it will take some time, a storyline for him to sink his teeth into. Something like you described would make perfect sense after all, but I just want to see that grow a little bit more, and less of a performance and more real.
I can see
which he did capture in the promo backstage talking about his grandparents. Like, that was real. And that's why that came across so well and got people so invested in him. So hopefully he can really bridge all of that into his matches overall. Because I haven't been that impressed with his wrestling, actually, in the tournament. Like, much less so than last year. I thought he had a much better year last year in the tournament. I thought he had a good match with Okada in the main event, but not great. And then the rest of it, I mean, this was a fine match, like Phantasmo and Loa. The Kenta match is like, I don't like the format of it where, okay, yeah, it's a 19-second match, but in reality, it's way longer because
we've seen our fair share of these kind of matches with Gabe Kidd as well.
It would be so much more impactful if they did that one time instead of five. Yes.
And twice on the same show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, that's the G1 shtick that we've seen grow in the last couple of years, that there is this idea that they have each year and they run it to death.
Yeah, I think it hurts more than it hurts.
Sure, ultimately. It does. It really does. Yeah, so that was Korakuen. Let's look at today's show from Ota City General Gymnasium. I made a post on our Eastern Lariat account. They drew a crowd of 2,316 fans to Ota Ward. That, we mentioned it on last show, was definitely better than the show for Stardom, the opening of the 5-Star Grand Prix that drew 1,747 fans. But it also was lower than, for example, the Best of the Super Junior Final, than New Year Dash, and also the final of the Champion Carnival. So in comparison, this show with this big main event that also delivered a big story in the end with Will Ospreay going over huge with the Ota crowd did not do as well as maybe New Japan wanted it to do.
No, it definitely didn't do as good as it wanted to do. I would say, just looking at your statistics for it. But, you know, it's interesting. It kind of goes to show they put a lot of their eggs in this basket for this big Okada Ospreay main event. We've been talking about it all tournament. This is the match where, you know, like I said, some people say Sonata and Kaito. But like I said, I mean, people saying Kaito was getting a title shot was the work of fantasy at the end of the day. Like, that was never going to happen. So, you know, ultimately, you know, this was their
That's really unfortunate because I was prepared to go on this show to take that victory lap on Jude Dillon, but unfortunately that did not happen.
It's nothing against his wrestling. It's just he's not, like, they were not going to do that. Like, they were going to put a Noah guy in the main event for a title. Like, that's not going to happen. But this was their one match they really had in the tournament that was up their sleeve, that had history to it, that it was a major match with their names. They put a lot of effort into building this up, ultimately. A lot of the matches were either random matches or stuff with these young guys, which, I mean, I have my thoughts on that, especially after this show, overall. But this was their one big match, ultimately. So you want this to be their big show. I mean, they told you that. That's why this was here and not in Corcoran. Like, this match would have been in Corcoran if they thought otherwise, overall. But unfortunately, it didn't really work out to they would want. But like you said, still better than a lot of the other companies right now, overall. Still, I mean, fourth best isn't bad. It's just not as much you would want when you're clearly the biggest company. You don't want to fall behind the Champion Carnival final. Although that did a way better than expected number, which, I mean,
they did what they did.
Yeah, credit to Ashino and T-Hawk in that main event to drum up interest. But yeah, like you said, ultimately, like, what you said is totally right. They did what they did. You know, and we'll see where they go in the future. It's going to be interesting to see when we get to Wrestle Kingdom season. Are they going to be able to bring in the fans for that overall? That's something I got my eye on. And even the finals of this tournament, ultimately, if they do a huge number, you know, at the end of the tournament, then people won't remember this. You know, this one won't really matter. Even the people in the company will be able to justify it, like, oh, well, yeah, Night 9 didn't do that great, but man, that Sumo Hall show was incredible. Like, that's all that's going to matter to them. So that's what we got to look at. But right now, the way things are going, you wanted a bigger number on the show.
As for the main event, this has a rating of 8.96 as we're speaking. It must be one of the highest rated matches of the tournament so far, and it probably is up there with the best matches of the tournament. I really enjoyed this. I really thought that this was a great match. This developed into a great match with the story that Will Ospreay had laid out before the tournament, that he was unsure if he has it in him to beat Okada in under 20 minutes, because Okada is a guy that has also been something that is that's been told a lot of times in recent months, that Okada is this force of nature that can't be held down within the first 20 minutes of a match. But now with the G1 circumstances, they have to hold him down in these 20. And they both approach the match with the idea that they need to gear up fast. Will Ospreay went for the leap of faith for his guy twister press very early in the match, missed for the first time actually. Okada went for the Rainmaker early. They left out a lot of their early offense that is just there to pop the crowd in some circumstances, and went right to work for the finish. And Will Ospreay did it with a new version of his hidden blade that was actually like a Rainmaker version, the ripcord hidden blade that knocked Okada loopy, that led Ospreay to then in the end put him away with Stormbreaker. Very, very clean, I noted, Dylan. I kind of expected Okada to kick out to get a little bit more juice out of the match. What did you think?
They have a great history, or an interesting history at least, to where they fit together really well, even stylistically, never mind their booking or whatever. Just how they wrestle, I think, is interesting. Just, you know, their styles coming together. I think that Ospreay, he's been another guy, I think he's gotten the best out of his tournament so far, you know, that he's had. He's had 5 matches and really been one of the leaders of the pack in terms of match quality overall, and in any block, I would say, not just B block. Okada's really been rising up. The last 3 matches, he's really stepped up. I think it's going to depend on your investment in Ospreay getting this big win overall, is how high you go with this. I think it's interesting, though, you said something. This is the highest rated match. I mean, this... it just happened today, so there's going to be more ratings to come through. Tomorrow,
One of the highest rated matches of the tournament. I just didn't really look it up.
Yeah, it's the highest rated. Like I said, it's 7 points, 0.7 points ahead of Ishii and Kingston.
Okay, okay.
So it's like right there. Like I said, it could go lower than that at the end. Or go over 9 again. But I think right now, as we talk, I think it's interesting that none of the matches have gone over 9 in Cage.
Exactly. And that's, I think, well-deserved, because I was just going to make a point for that match as well, because, much like I said, most of the matches for the first 6, 7, 8 minutes are good. It's all right. It's not like it's setting the world on fire. That's why I love the Okada and Taichi match so much, because 2 minutes into the match, Okada went for the Rainmaker, and it was all action, all fire after that. But most of the matches, like, fail to give this final spark, and that's why none of the matches are actually like next level matches that you want for a G1 climax, that you want in a post-pandemic New Japan Pro Wrestling that still has way to go to get fan interest back. And that match still has not happened.
And I agree with that. Even the top match of the tournament, like whatever it is, I don't think there's any match that will say, oh, this is a threat to win the Best Bout Award, like in the Eastern Lariat Awards, maybe Tokyo Sports. Who knows what they'll do? But but with our, like, there's no match of the year candidate, I feel like, that's happened yet. There's a lot of really great matches. This was one of them.
Do you want the spoiler? By the way, before you go to it, any details? Do you want the spoiler? What wins Best Match in Tokyo Sports?
What?
Okada versus Naomi Chimaru Fuji. Ospreay versus Naomi Chimaru Fuji.
If Okada and Maru Fuji won, that would be really interesting. But no, Ospreay and Maru Fuji, I could honestly see Naito and Muto getting the best bout for Tokyo.
But we'll
see how that goes. But the fact is that none of these matches have gone in there. And I personally preferred what you said. I like the Taichi and the Yoshihashi match better than this one. But I just grade them as matches overall. I don't have an investment in the story for Ospreay as much. I think it's cool that he got the win. I mean, who knows where he goes from here? I mean, this, for all we know, this could be his swan song before he goes to AEW, much like Aussie Open. Like, this is really the last thing he really hadn't accomplished in New Japan was beating Okada, and now he's done it. So where does he go from here?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Do you? I mean, he has the tiebreaker over Okada now. He pretty much has to win the match right now.
I predicted that. Like
I predicted that as well, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I think this was pretty obvious, I think.
Yeah, this sets up Okada being able to face Kaito later on. So, you know, it's fine.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but after G, where does he go?
You know, that's... I mean, we debated that. We debated what Ospreay could do. They could, of course, set up the rematch with Omega that would then once again be another thing off the bucket list, because Ospreay, I guess, would beat Omega at Wrestle Kingdom, and then what?
Well, they might do it at the AEW show as well, Wimbley. I mean, we know there won't be any build to it, but I think we just have to hope that it goes off its own laurels pretty much there. So, we don't know. His future is very interesting. Like, how long is he going to be in this company overall?
Definitely true that he has achieved basically everything that there is. Unless, with the exception of the G1 Climax, of course.
That's true. He has not won this tournament yet. So we have to say that's a good point there. We may have to wait and see what happens there. That could be a story for him to lead into next year.
Yeah. Then we, of course, had Zanada going to 10, unbeaten still at this point. Very interesting that they did it this way, because when they announced it, how it is in the block that Narita would be out with Zanada beating him, I figured that maybe we could see an upset here with Narita
rolling
him up or something. But they didn't do that. They Narita had control over a lot of this match, and I really liked it once again how he went to work here. He had Zanada in a lot of holes. Most importantly, of course, his Manjigatame, the Cobra twist. But ultimately, once again, it was Zanada's deadfall. That's the one move that nobody has an answer for so far in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So it's going to be interesting who is going to be the first one to really counter it. Because remember, it was the move that Zanada countered the Destino and the Rainmaker with to win the New Japan Cup and also win the world title from Okada. And that's the move that is still winning him the matches. And Renarita is down at 2, and Zanada is already through to the semifinals. So, yeah, Block A is already pretty much decided.
Yeah, I mean, with this win, he clinches the block like already. So, like, even with two shows to go.
Yeah, tiebreaker over Kiyomiya.
And Umino as well. So, like I said, so he will advance no matter what with two matches to go and Narita eliminated. I was with you. I was on upset alert for this match. You know, I think it's interesting that they've gone this route with Sonata, because, I mean, his last two matches are with Chase and Kid. So, you know, like, what are they going to do? I mean, I guess they could give Kid a big win over him, but why wouldn't you just do that with Narita if you were going to do that? It's really weird. Like, this whole A block is so weird and off-putting to me, actually, in general, that I saw a lot of comments about this match, too, and you know, as easy as it would be, I think Sonata's got a lot of flaws as a performer and definitely as a draw and star, I would say. But in this match, Narita was the one that was shaky. And unfortunately, a lot of people came away with that reaction. And it's a shame because I remember his match versus Ishii, match versus Shibata at Wrestle Kingdom, Ishii in the TV title tournament. It felt like they had a great path ahead for him. And now you see him here, and he really hasn't impressed in this tournament overall. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were speculating, do you think that because of this whole Three Musketeers thing that everyone told me was so great, and I was the crazy one for thinking it was stupid, do you think that put so much pressure on this guy that it's affected him?
I think so too. I think so, because I've said it a bunch of times about his entire look and what they put into him. I mean, he has to see that the company is putting so much more stake into Yoda Tsuji and into Shota Umino. Yeah. And he is the one that has to work the hardest to make an impression. Whereas these two, you mentioned it with Shota Umino. Shota Umino, he will get chance after chance after chance. And Yoda Tsuji, he also is a guy that just from his looks will just get this one more chance or these two more chances over Ren Narita.
Yeah, and Tsuji has something Narita doesn't. Ultimately, in terms of his like charisma, how he carries himself. So they really haven't. It's been so weird how they booked these three in this tournament. I don't understand it at all because Tsuji's eliminated as well now. I don't understand what they're doing ultimately. Maybe this will all come into play. I think more accurately, they'll revert away from this and try and fix it by doing something different because this isn't working, what they're doing. Then everyone will say, oh, it all worked out in the end. But I think this tournament has not been good for them outside of Umino, because Umino has really impressed, I would say.
I actually enjoyed Yoda Tsuji's story. I said it on the last show that there is this the idea that he's not able to put his opponents away, but then he got the first win over Chase Owens in a match that frustrated me to no end, to be honest, because you just can't believably tell me that Chase Owens is a guy that dominates Yoda Tsuji.
Oh, absolutely agree.
And but then he loses to Hikuleo, and we're at square one again.
And that's the thing, like, there really wasn't any story. Like, ultimately, like, we were trying to fit a story into place, and now it's come apart. Now that time has come across, because now that doesn't work anymore, because he already got a win, and now he's losing. So really, there was no story. We were trying to make one up in our heads to make it better than it actually was overall. So unfortunately, I mean, the thing is, though, like I said, he's such a star power guy, like, star presence, that he will... Like, whatever they do with him, he'll make it work. Like, ultimately, Tsuji. Narita does not have that, ultimately. And now his in-ring work is faltering. I don't think he's performed up to expectation throughout this tournament, unfortunately. He's the guy that I pegged as he is the work rate guy. You put him in any match, you have great matches against anybody. And hopefully that can carry him as far as he needs to go. Much like, obviously, Shibata, as they try so hard to make him like, ultimately. But unfortunately, it's not working that way, like, because his matches aren't as good as Umino's. Like, Umino to me has gained the most of this tournament by far, of the three. I mean, he's had great matches up and down.
And he's had every kind of match, and you said it, up and down. He has had a great standout match with the time limit draws that he had, and now he had this easy opening match win. He has basically had every kind of match that there is in the G1.
And now the one good thing I will say for him, again, it has nothing to do with the Three Musketeers thing being good, though. Like, what they're doing with Umino is good on its own, because now he is in line that he could advance. Like, it's not unrealistic that he gets by Kaito, especially if you look at the way they set it up.
That's right.
Like, the way they've set up the tournament, in terms of, if you look what's coming up next, Night 11, Umino faces Tsuji, which we would presume to be a draw. And Kaito faces Hikuleo. So Hikuleo could beat Kaito. Like, they're going to go on that size tangent that he has, which is why he beat Tsuji. And that would mean Umino would be leading into the last night, and Umino faces Hikuleo the last night as well. And Kaito faces Narita. So here is what I think may happen. They are going to do a storyline where Narita faces Kaito and is fighting for Umino to advance. Like, if Narita wins, then Umino will advance and try to set up a story, kind of what I called for at the start of the tournament, where I wanted to give them a moment together, where somebody advances. I think a lot of people thought it would be Tsuji, but it's turned out to be Umino instead.
Yeah, I actually had none of these advancing in my pick'ems, but I can see that idea.
No, everybody thought it would be Sonata and Kaito, but the way they've set it up gives you an... Like, and that may still happen. They may even have Kaito just win in the end, and Hikuleo beats Umino. Like, you know, you give Hikuleo this big push for whatever reason. But
That's definitely a match that has upset alert, yeah.
yeah, Hikuleo versus Kaito and Hikuleo versus Umino. So, like, they've set it up to where Hikuleo is now right involved. Sonata's already advancing, no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. He's beaten both of them. So it doesn't even matter what he does. But Narita and Kaito circled that match, because I do think that's going to be Ren's last shot to have a match that can really stand out and that has storyline implications. So kind of what I think is going to happen is Narita is going to fight for Umino. Like, if Narita wins, Umino advances. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the main story on the last night, because Sonata's already advanced. So I think that would be very fun and interesting, and they may spin this to where it all works out in the end. But I do think it's had, the way they booked this tournament has had negative impact on Rin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we already talked about the El Fantasmo deal with Kenta. We said Hikuleo beat Yudatsuji. Oh, that's the second match I've not seen from the show, actually, looking at it. It has a pretty high rating. Wow. Yeah. This Hikuleo and Yudatsuji match has two ratings, 1.9 and 1.8 rating.
That's a little higher than I would rate it, but it was a better match than Hikuleo would have.
Okay.
I mean, Tsuji's just great. Like, Tsuji is going to be a star unless they just totally drop the ball. Like, he has impressed so much and did once again here. But again, I wouldn't say it was like a great match, but I'd say it was a good match, which is great for Hikuleo. Overall, yeah. Probably his best match of the tournament. I think it was even better than Ren's match, actually.
Kaito Kiyomiya, he has such a wide range in this tournament. I've said it with Shota Umino. He had the ability to have the crowd rally behind Shota Umino without actually going into a direction that he would be a cheating heel or that he would be an evil heel like the House of Torture is most of the times, an off-putting heel that they are. Kaito Kiyomiya, in this circumstance with Gabe Kidd, also proved that he can be a tremendous babyface, because Gabe Kidd beat him down to no end. Kaito Kiyomiya, at this one point, he couldn't even stand up and punch Gabe Kidd. Kidd was laughing him off, and not only did Kaito Kiyomiya look great as a babyface in this role, in this match, I thought that Gabe Kidd really put it together, whereas at the beginning of the tournament, this role didn't really suit him well. But also with the Shota Umino match on the Kurikan before, and with this match, I think he found a good middle ground between cheating and being just a disgusting, awful human being to the other guy. And I thought he proved it here very well. This match has a rating of 8.58. I was drawn into it. This was very good.
Yeah, see, it's up to 8.78 now.
Oh, wow.
And Ospreay and Okada's dropped to 8.91, so it's only 2 points away from falling down below Kingston and Ishii as we speak right now. But yeah, this is a great match. Way better than Kidd's other matches. And like you said, it seems like he's finally found a good balance between what he was going for before and what he can be. And I think Kaito deserves a lot of credit as well for making this work so well. As I said, though, I do think it would be a lot more impactful if this was the first time we saw this, like, this style from him, and they did set up, they had a little bit of a feud in when they had the opening press conference with Kidd calling out Kaito.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did set this up a little bit, and it led to a wonderful match, not dissimilar from the Julia and Sariano match on the Stardom show.
Yeah.
Overall, where they had this brawl, a heated brawl. That one had more meat to it, in my opinion, than this one did, but this was still really great and one of the better matches of the tournament, and one that had legit heat to it, which, I think is very important, because a lot of these matches do go by, and some of them are really well worked, even some of those Ishii matches that I like so much, but they don't have the heat that something like this had, the emotion of it. So I like that they added that in. I thought Kidd, I mean, good on him for finally stepping up and having a big match. I think he really needed that, because the War Dogs were one of the ones who struggled the most throughout the tournament to me. I have not liked their tournament at all, and he needed this match to kind of turn things around and hang his hat on. And Kaito's been one of the best. You could easily argue he's been the best person.
Yeah, there can be a case made for Kaito Kiyomiya to be one of the best performers, definitely. No argument there, yeah. Yes, so let's see. What else? Taichi
and Yoshihashi?
Yeah, okay match. Was a bit too long, I thought.
Yeah, they were both great against Okada. Not as great against each other. But it's still a good match. I think Taichi's been one of the sleeper hits as well. I think he's had all pretty much, outside of the Kenta match, which was a terrible, terrible match, everything else was good that he's done, and some of it's been great. I think he's been a top-tier guy, and Yoshihashi is just, You know, like I said, very, very good person for this early match spot. But like you said, I think that these two just didn't have the juice against each other that they had against when they have an antagonist to go against rather than two kind of guys on the same level. I think they'd be better if they had an antagonist to go against.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Yeah, and so that's it for the show from Ottawa, Dylan. There's three more shows that we have with block action of block A and B together and C and D together until the 2nd of August. And then we reach August 5 from Osaka, where it will be the final of block A, with August 6 also Osaka block B final, and August 8 and 9 for the block C and D finals. And yeah, that is it for now, I guess, unless you have one more point that you wanted to address.
Yeah, I have a couple of things I want to ask you before we get on out of here. Oh. Because, like you said, now we're nearing the end. Like, the end is inside of these blocks now. And C and D block have an extra show compared to the A and B, so A and B is a little bit more clearer than the other two. Do you have any kind of changes from anything you've predicted in terms of who will advance in the blocks? Particularly A and B.
A and B?
Yeah.
I can see your point about block A, but I still think it ultimately will be Kaito that is advancing, especially with...
I think it'll be Kaito too, but I think they're setting up the ability to Narita to have a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They set that up. I think it's this block is, even though it seems wild what they did with all the draws... by the way, also, I want to point out that in recent years, I've looked that up specifically for our pickings that we did at Straight Wrestling, because Morbo picked a double disqualification, and with a double count, like, they're kind of cheating once again here. They had this double count out, Gabe Kidd and Kaito Kiyomiya, and in years prior, I actually looked that up, there would be no points for a double count out, but they always went back and forth depending on what they needed for the tournament.
Hey, right 15, right 15 told you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Corrupt. This is more proof.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to point that out, definitely. This is set up more open than, of course, everybody thought that Kaito and Zanada would be advancing. But now it seems that... Shota Umino has more of a shot to actually make it to the quarterfinals, but ultimately I think it will be Kaito Kiyomiya. Block B, I think there is no surprises with Osprey and Okada on top, and that will go through. Yeah, and what surprised me definitely is that Jeff Cobb got the victory over Zack Sabre Jr. I did not see that coming, so he has this big run. Of course, now he's facing Toru Yano next, so he will be losing, and that will then set up his downfall.
Yano, the last person with no points. I picked Cobb to advance in D block. I don't think there's... I think like he's a guy they should get behind, actually.
They should.
Overall. And then they have before. Like I said, they had that. They built a whole tournament around him 2 years ago.
It's also going to be hard for Zach because he doesn't have the tiebreaker.
And he was never going to advance. He's the TV champion. So like he was never in my predictions anyway. Naito is the one to watch. Mm-hmm. He'll win and get there. And it'll be Naito and Cobb, which is what I predicted.
What about block C, Dylan?
That's the most interesting one. Right. I do want to give them credit, though, with A block, because as I said earlier, I thought, oh, well, there's no drama with all these draws. But they've actually been able to make it work. Like with Umino, they've created extra drama, even though I got to give Umino credit for outperforming what I thought of him. He's doing a great job, having the best run of his career. I still think Tsuji has more to him, in my opinion, but it's their first year. It doesn't matter. And like we said, I think we both think Kaito will get it. It'll end up that way, but I think they've done a good job of making it more interesting, at least how it played out. B block, like you said, very obvious, Osprey and Okada. D block, Naito's the one to watch. Goto's injured, so he'll be out. I guess they could do something with Tanahashi. I do think they'll make it to where Tanahashi and Naito on the last night will be the main, like who the winner advances or something like that. C block, though, this is the one that's everything's jumbled pretty much. But I do think ultimately, I still think Finlay will make it and Shingo as well.
Finlay is a lock, I think.
I mean, he's tied with two other people, right?
He's also the NEVER champion, but yeah.
And they could see that as a negative. But the problem is they've invested so much with this story that he has to advance, pretty much, with the block. The other ones, I feared evil may make it. You know, Shingo's right there. I mean, any of these guys could advance on the other spot, I would say. You know.
That's the thing about the House of Torture, the point that I made a couple of shows ago where I said that it's good when they're not in the main events, because the mid-card matches that they have, you will know that ultimately they will not win, even though you fear they might win. At some point, they have to give them something to keep that narrative going, that people actually believe that they might be winning something, and that could be it with Evil.
I predicted him last year to make it, and they really went away. He was not a factor at all last year. Thankfully, he wasn't as well. The tournament was better for it. So now we've sacrificed this year to I guess, give him that. And I do think Shingo will make it at the end, though. And the reason I say that is because he started off so slow. And historically, they always have somebody like lose a few matches at first and then rise up at the end. And I think that could be his role here. But it could easily be Evil. Tonga could make it. I mean, him and Finlay have had it as well. You know, like, no reason not to. I don't think they'll put Kingston over as an AEW guy, but it's possible. Like, you know, if Tony Khan, you know, negotiated something, like, who knows? You know, they're doing good work overall. I think the tournament actually, A-Block has turned into the most interesting one, like, of all the blocks with that final storyline. With the other ones, I feel like it's either obvious or just not very interesting. Like, overall, with C-Block, I mean, we all know what it is, but any of these guys advancing, I don't see any threats coming from this block to make any noise on the quarterfinals. So it's interesting overall, and we'll have to see where it goes. But I wanted to ask you, because now we're near the end, pretty much. We've got one show left for A and B before the final night of block play, and then two more for C and D. So I will say that I graded up the scores, as I said. I haven't taken out go through all of my scientific method to make it better. It's just the match ratings, which I don't always love. I don't think that always tells the full story of somebody's tournament. But I did do it right now, and right now I will share these for everybody. Heading in, so this does not count Night 9, which just happened this morning. I haven't added them in. You would expect Ospreay, Okada, Kaito, and Kid to all get big bumps as things go. But the top five of the tournament, the top person in each block, A block was Kaito. He was just ahead of Umino. Like, Kaito is at 3.75. Umino is at 3.65. And I think Kaito will go ahead of him here again, too. Tsuji was third, and Naruto was fourth. And then Sonata was fifth. And they're all over three. So they're all doing pretty good in A block there. Even though I think Naruto I had much higher expectations for. But he's done okay in the tournament anyway in terms of wrestling. B block, I have Ospreay narrowly in the lead at 3.69. Yoshihashi and Okada are both tied at 3.63. Mm-hmm. And Taichi will make a step up because, again, I thought that Kenta match was so bad that none of the others have
wrestled. It will fall out, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So once that gets taken away, he'll be up there again. C block, Ishii is the highest overall scorer at 3.88. Sure. Shingo tied for second with Kaito at 3.75. Mikey at 3.57. So he's up there in the top 10. He's below Ospreay, Hashi, and Okada, but ahead of Tsuji. So good for him. And then D-Block, like I said, nobody really doing good. Cobb at 3.06 is the only one ahead of 3-star average. So I
think those are pretty much on point.
Yeah, and I think there's still room for somebody to jump ahead as well. Like, Ospreay is going to be very close. Kaito is going to be very close. Like, Kaito, Ospreay, Ishii, and then Shingo and Umino and Okada are kind of like, those are the guys kind of swirling around. Even though for me, just never mind ratings, just my favorite people, like, Nichols is up there for me as, like, the person I'm most interested in every time he's on the screen. I know that's, like, something nobody could have expected heading in. I think Kanari's had a pretty decent tournament. Obviously, the match with Mike stood out. I know we didn't like the Shingo match as much as other people, you know. But I think he's had a good tournament and improved his stock with the new gimmick. We didn't really talk about him on this show too much, but he's changed the gimmick, changed his look, really improved himself. And hopefully, Haste, if he can have a couple of more good matches, he can end the tournament on a good note and bring something to Block D. But overall, like I said, good tournament, not great. They're missing that big match, which we hope they have by the end of the tournament. They have that match of the year, something everybody remembers forever. That's the one thing I think this tournament needs to really get it to that next level, in my opinion.
Tomohiro Ishii versus Mikey Nichols can be the match.
They haven't wrestled yet. That's right. Yeah, there we go. See? There we go. That's going to be my jam right there overall. That might be my most anticipated match that's left. I still hold out hope for Narita to deliver against Kaito. If they bring up the storyline like I predicted, I have hope for that. But we'll have to see how it plays out overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for your star ratings overall. Much like I said, they are pretty much on point. I would agree with all of them. So no argument made there, Dylan. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, that brings us to the end of the show, I guess. We'll be back sometime next week. We have not decided yet. But for now, that has been it for the Eastern Lariat. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.